Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Brew Seal. Welcome to our special show. It's Tuesday, February 24th, and we're doing a special Brewer's Choice mobile recording from Hops Hill in Clinton Hill, Brooklyn. It's a very cool place. They've got 12 beers on tap, and they've got spirits, and it's a great place. They've welcomed us in. Got some great guests, thanks to our sponsors at Union Beer Distributors, suppliers of world-class ales and lagers. So some special guests, all been part of this local hop and grain and local beer movement. We're featuring some special beers today, many with New York State grains and hops at the Brewer's Choice event. So Nico Kremidis, who's been on quite a few shows, wrote a great article today in Edible Brooklyn previewing the Smash beers. We've also got Mike and Matt from Port Jeff. We haven't seen you in a while, but
yeah, thanks for having us back, Jimmy. We appreciate it.
And guests we've been waiting to come to New York City, Natalie and Matt Marty from Farmhouse Brewing upstate.
Good to see you there.
Good to be here.
It's a good show. We're getting ready for the event. You can hear the background noise. We're at Hop Hills right now. It's a full bar. People waiting to go over to our event. So, Nico, tell us about the article you wrote today. Give us a little background on the Smash beers.
So the New York City Brewers Guild chose three malts and three hops from New York State, and they had about half of the guild members make a special beer from them. And what I found most interesting was most of the beers were completely different from each other.
I mean, it was a great challenge. We're looking forward to trying them today. So what happened? They basically got the guild picked three different malts and three different hops. And each brewer made their own recipe.
Yep, exactly.
So we're going to look forward to tasting that today. So, big story. You guys, Natalie and Marty. I was going to call you Natalie Matrazzo, Marty Matrazzo. You guys are Farmhouse Brewery, Farmhouse Malt. Tell us what you guys do, because you're kind of one of that new breed.
Well, we started out a while ago with the Malt House, knowing that in the end we were going to have a brewery attached to it. So that's we work with farmers. Natalie works with the farmers and gets the grain to us. We get raw grain, we malt it, which gets into a state where you make beer with it. And we make make our beer as close to 100% New York State as possible. We work with farmers, grain farmers as well as hop farmers from around the state.
I know a few years ago there really wasn't many opportunities to get grains and malts from New York State.
How
has that changed?
I think word has gotten out. Cornell University has done quite a bit of work in recruiting and educating and preparing farmers for this revolution called craft beer and sourcing local ingredients. And I've invested a lot of time in learning how to talk the farmer language and recruiting them. And it's still a difficult crop to grow. I recently heard you talking to Dietrich Gehring about this. It's fraught with difficulties, but experienced grain growers grow a beautiful product, and we buy once a year. We buy a lot of grain, and we malt it all year, and use as much of it as we can in our own beers, and sell to a small number of other breweries that we have a supply for.
That's great. And Mike and Matt, Mike, we had you on a few years ago for Port Jeff Brewing. What's it like out on Long Island in terms of getting malts and hops from New York?
Well, I think, in the past couple of years, we've had a revolution, really, with the hops. There's three prominent growers on Long Island, and there's now a gentleman who's going to start a malt house, which Natalie and I were just speaking about. Brian Zimmerman is interested in getting a malt house going, which is great. I mean, malt, I think, on Long Island is a little difficult because of just real estate. So, even if you're talking about just being a malt house and not necessarily growing the grain in Long Island, you're still talking about a high cost of starting the business. And so I think that's one of the things that Brian's wrestling with. But the reality is that he can get malts or the grain specifically from New York and bring it to Long Island to malt it. And that's really what he's looking to do. So I know that there's, and Natalie, you can probably talk better to this point, but I know that there is grain that's being produced in New York that's not necessarily being malted in New York.
Yes.
At the moment, and the reason for that is there's just not
right.
enough maltsters or the capacity for it. And as a brewer, I'd like to see more of that. I mean, we would love to incorporate New York malts into our products. We've been able to do that with some of the hops, but the malts seem to be the thing that's
in short.
Yeah, totally.
So you're saying that until there's more malt houses, more farmers don't want to grow grain?
Well, there are four or five malt houses currently in operation. We're all quite small, micro malt houses compared to, there's quite a big gap between micro malt houses and the really big guys. Valley Malt in Massachusetts make amazing malt. They've taught us a lot of what we know. They're great people. But they buy quite a bit of grain from New York State growers. The other malt houses in New York State, all of us pretty much buy as much as we can of our supply from New York State farmers. This was the first year there was a surplus of malting barley that was not scooped up in state, which is impressive given it's only been 3 years we've been promoting this new crop. But it's also weather dependent, disease pressure dependent.
Let's talk about the beer that you brought, and we'll taste three beers tonight for the show.
So this is Boondock. It's a 100% New York State grown ingredients. Both the malt and the hops are New York. It's wild yeast fermented, so it has a little bit of funk going on.
Just a tad. It's actually...
It's pretty nice. Clean.
It's really nice.
Primary
yeah.
fermented with the Dirty Dozen from East Coast yeast.
Okay.
So it came out pretty clean. A little bit of funk. It's developing a little bit more as it gets older. We have...
How old is this beer now?
A month out of the ferment.
Okay, so it potentially could...
It'll be
going
more.
A couple
different
directions.
We put half of it we split, and it's sitting in our tasting room floor, staying warm, and in kegs, and aging in kegs. The other half we're serving fresh.
Okay.
Right out of the...
It's great fresh.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I like it, too. Kind of, when I think of farmhouse, but farm-made farmhouse beers, this is what I expect.
Yeah, it's a little dirty, a little bright.
Rustic. Wheat.
Yeah, it's rustic looking, yeah.
What do you think, Nico? I mean, you've been farming beer now for, I don't know how many years, between Long Island Pulse and Edible Brooklyn and Yankee Brew News and now Brooklyn Magazine. I mean, do you see a big change going on with that?
Yeah, even in the last few years, I think, like they said, with the malt makers, I think that is a bottleneck, and hopefully that'll start to change. And I actually had heard about Brian Zimmerman trying to do that. I think he launched a Kickstarter project, right?
He did, and we met with him last week. He came in. Really what he was trying to establish, he met with us at Poor Chef, but he also met, I know he met with GSB, and he met with a couple of the other brewers on Long Island. I think really his focus at this point was to figure out, you know, if I do this, what do you need, or what's going to make the most sense for me to malt? You know, because, you know, obviously that's, he wants to keep it local, and kind of, he understands, I think, to some degree that there's, you know, the issue, or one of the issues with malt is delivery or shipping. And so he understands that if he's bringing it to the island, he kind of wants it to stay there, because he's going to be able to have a competitive advantage to some degree with keeping the shipping costs down. And so for him to be able to bring in the right grains and malt what we need on Long Island, or what we use, is kind of the focus that he was going
into. Absolutely. We've had a hard time finding people who would ship to Long Island.
You right.
Know, trying to find, we have a pallet and we want to ship it, and they're like, well, I don't know.
Oh, yeah. It is expensive. They'll give you a price, you know, on the phone, and they're like, oh, wait, you're in Long Island? Well, that's a bridge. Technically you're in like a third world country, even though it's next to New York.
Yeah.
But it's rightfully so, because you got to go over a bridge, and then you have to deal with Long Islanders and the traffic in Long Island. So there's a tax for that.
Yeah.
I think that's why the British lost the Revolutionary War. Or something.
Right.
The Hudson in New York City, right?
That's right. Had something to do with that.
Well, Nico, you're talking about Long Island. You introduced me to many Long Island brewers a few years ago, including Mike from Port Chef. So what's going on out there? I mean, there's so many great breweries on Long Island.
Yeah, actually kind of a... like an in-house, I guess if you would call it an incubator brewery, just opened up in Farmingdale, which I find really interesting. Out of the Taste of Long Island, it's kind of like a commercial kitchen. So about four small batch breweries just opened out of there.
Yeah, and I know today at the New York City Brewers Choice, from Long Island we have Port Chef, we have Rocky Point / Secret Engine, we have Greenport Harbor.
Yeah.
Not sure who else. We were pretty tight. Everybody's pretty
Mustache.
Much.
Mustache.
Yeah, Mustache. I saw Lori as we walked over here. Lori and Matt asked me where I parked, and I said I took the train, and she just gave me a disgusted look, and it kept going. But they're doing quite well on Long Island too, so it's good to see. There's a lot of nano activity on Long Island right now, and you know, that's again, you in Long Island, there's a lot of barriers to entry with regards to finding a building that's affordable that you can do a production business like that. And so, like Nico said, you have the Taste of Long Island, which you have Pool Boy, Brewers Collective, 1949. or 1940s, I'm sorry, and now I've heard Lithology is actually going to start there too, and so there's a lot of activity. You have Barrage in Long Island now too, that's putting out some excellent beers, but it's all on a very, very small scale. So it's interesting to see how the landscape is going to, you know, if we're going to continue to see nano breweries that do that. I mean, when you talk about nano breweries, you have somebody like Barrier, who I'm drinking the Money IPA. They're having an event here tonight. They started as a one barrel system, you know, and basically grew into what they are now. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with all the activity that you have kind of in the works on Long Island.
What did you make for beer today? Choice.
We actually, so we copped out in a sense, and when I say that is, we brought our Birradina Cola, and the Birradina Cola that is actually a beer that we only make for Ruvo Restaurant. It's a beer that the owner of Ruvo Restaurant and myself kind of conceived based off of beers that he liked. We then turned it into kind of a New York beer, so we used some rye from Valley, and we also use all Cascade hops, which is from Kinsella's farm in Wading River.
Your buddy John, yeah.
Yeah, John. Actually, the first time I was on your show, it was John came on the show with us when we did Surge Protector, and he had just finished his Kickstarter campaign. Now he has 4 years of growth in the field for his hops, predominantly. Cheers.
You can hear that. This is hop show. It's kind of packed right now. Have people for Brewer's Choice where you're having this Barrier, Secret Engine, and Single Cut Tap Takeover all night. So people are going from Brewer's Choice back to hop show. Some people are going to COVID Hoven. I know that's one of your favorite. All the writers, like Justin Kennedy is here, Josh Bernstein. I know, Nico, you like it too.
I love the backyard.
Is that in this neighborhood too? That's Crown Heights.
It's in Crown Heights. So, I mean, I guess you could walk over, but not in this temperature right now.
Yeah,
I'll tell you one reason where we're at this venue on 525 Waverly Ave is it's right next door to Kelly Taylor's Brewery, Kelso, Heartland, Greenpoint Works. So there's a lot of cool stuff going on out here. Marty, let's drink one more beer before our break so we can get oriented.
Sure, this is our...
It's my first time trying your beer.
Yeah, this is our post-hole. It's a double IPA. All the hops come from one hop yard in Unadilla. So it's 2 pounds of hops per barrel. All Cascade and Centennial. It turned out to be not very bitter. I think the East Coast hops tend to have a less bittering units. So it turns out real smooth, although you get a lot of hop flavor from it.
Now you actually grew these hops too?
No, these are one of the farmers we worked with in Unadilla.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I missed that.
So like as a farmhouse brewery, that means trying to buy...
So we produce what we can, and from what we don't produce, we buy from local farmers. So all the hops in all our beer are all New York State hops, and all the base malt in our beer is all New York State grown base malt. So it takes a lot for us to want to even do a double IPA. There's only so many hops to be bought every year.
Right.
And to do 2 pounds per barrel is using a lot of our what we have. And you know, you start biting your fingernails wondering if we're going to run out of hops in July before the next harvest comes out, you know.
And so these are all whole leaf hops.
This particular batch is. Yeah, we made one batch before this that featured a different hop yard that we worked with that were pelletized. This one was all whole cone, and it was a pain. It was 6 inches deep of cones at the bottom of the brew kettle.
Right, because you're losing a lot of the volume of your liquid to the absorption in that whole leaf.
Yeah.
One thing that I've seen with New York hops that is starting to change is that people are buying pelletizers, which is a good thing because, as you know, we only have a 7-barrel system, but using whole leaf hops can be an issue because we don't really want to add them into early editions because they're going to clog our heat exchanger.
Yeah, we generally use them mostly for aroma hops. Basically, what I'll do is use the mash tun as a hop pack. I can put as many hops as I want in at that point. It doesn't clog up, you know, the kettle, the heat exchanger, and we can use a whole ton of them too. So we can really get that hop character in our beer. So.
All right. But the addition of having hop growers that have a pelletizer definitely helps. So.
Yeah, that's huge. And there's a couple players in upstate that they're doing it. There's one large one in Unadilla, Cooperstown area, and then there's another one out in...
Oneana?
Well, the Rochester is thinking of that does the pelletizing.
Right.
Where is Newark Valley? I mean, because we kind of know Long Island, New York City, but
it's in the middle of nowhere.
I know where Albany is.
We're in the middle of nowhere.
I know where
we're
Cooperstown
about 30
is.
It's
right past Westchester.
South, yeah. East of Ithaca.
Ah, all right.
Yeah. About 30-minute drive from Binghamton. Ithaca is gorgeous.
It must be right
there. Nico's wearing a Cortland.
It's about half an hour
right
from
now.
Cortland, Ithaca, Elmira, in Binghamton.
New York Valley's claim to fame is we have a stoplight now.
Oh.
We have a stoplight.
You have
a stoplight.
Oh, yes.
A fully functioning stoplight, or is it just a blinking red or yellow? No,
that's the next town north of us that has the blinking red one.
Right. They're old school.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I expect when I hear that someone's called a farmhouse brewery. So, all right, we're going to take a few minutes break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio.
You're listening to Kill Me in the Summertime by Dead Stars.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're doing a special Beer Week show at Hop Cell in Clinton Hill, Brooklyn, before we go over to the New York City Brewer's Choice. We got Nico Kremitas, a great writer, Natalie and Marty from Farmhouse Brewery, and Mike and Matt from Port Jeff out on Long Island. So, the new guys, Matt, you're working for Port Jeff, and I first met Mike a few years ago, and you guys have grown. So, how long have you been working at the brewery, and what are some of the jobs that you do?
Well, I've been at the brewery for a little over a year now. Mike brought me up from Pennsylvania, where I'd been brewing for Iron Hill Brewery for about 7 years. Came up, and you know, it's pretty much been my life since then. Brewing's a pretty consuming job, you know, especially if you're, you know, trying to grow and get bigger. You know, I figure I'm in there 60 hours a week on average, and when I'm not there, that's what I'm thinking about. You know, it's pretty much a consuming sort of thing, but I love it. You know, I wouldn't want to be doing anything else at this point.
Mike, when you started, how many guys were working for you?
One, but no. When I started, you know, when we opened our doors, there was really three of us. There was myself and another guy doing the brewing, and then we had some interns that kind of found their way into positions. I've known Matt for probably almost 10 years, maybe a little longer than that now, back in my life in Pennsylvania. And when I was going to school, when I went to brew school at Siebel, I actually went down to Matt on multiple occasions at Iron Hill to kind of do like practicum stuff to see a real system work other than my 10-gallon system at home. So he's a little bit of a mentor, and at the same time brews awesome beer, so I somehow convinced him to come down here. And it's been good. So now we have Matt leads a team of three guys in the brew house, and then you know, we have a host of characters that help us out in other ends of the spectrum too, whether it's marketing or the tasting room or doing events and things like that. So it's really grown to be really a family. I'm blessed in the fact that we have people that are very passionate about beer, and I think like their jobs. So you really couldn't ask for much more than that. So.
Right, let's pour your beer. Let's taste that.
What do you want to try? You want to try the beer with Kinsella's hops in it?
Yeah, right. Something New York State, something that you have at the event tonight.
Let's do that. So this is the beer Dina Cole, and like I said, this beer is a beer that we conceived with my friend Joe Dina Cole, who owns Ruvo Restaurants in Del Fuego and La Tavola, which is they're all located in Long Island. He came to me and said, listen, I want a house beer. And this was actually 2 years ago. He said during the holidays, he's like, I want a beer that we can pour that we only have. And he's like, I want to give a dollar of every pint that I sell of this beer just to make somebody's holidays happy. So that's how it started. And so when we first conceived it, he said, well, here's I like Brooklyn Lager. I like Anchor Steam. and I like Bengali Tiger. So I said, listen, Joe, the three of those have absolutely nothing in common, but what we came up with was this beer, which is basically, we call it a rye PA. So it's a pale ale with rye in it, and it has Cascade hops from John Kinsella's hop farm. And so initially we were using Cascade hops from the Pacific Northwest, and then once I started getting some really nice hops from John, we just transferred it straight over to just John's hops. So
John's actually coming in and brewed with us a few times too. You know, he was looking to get his own knowledge about brewing, so we would have him come in. And I believe he's brewed this beer a couple times with us now. He's actually brought
he
the
brewed
hops
this
in,
one, yeah.
And then, you know, I let him put the hops in.
Yeah. So he grew the hops and put the hops in. So it's nice because you get a little cereal action from the rye. But it's, for me, you know, the hops initially from Long Island were, they were hops. They were flowers and what have you. But they didn't really have the oomph that you get as far as the lupulin and the alpha acids and things that we would look for as brewers. And now, especially this past year, the harvest, I've seen the hops actually, like really magnificent hops coming out of Long Island. So we're extremely excited and proud of the hop growers we have. Not just John, but people like North Shore Hops and Justin at Winofsky Farms. Like all these guys are actually producing some really good quality strains of hops. So.
Right. Cheers, man. It's great beer. You can taste the rye, definitely.
Absolutely. Good stuff.
And so, Natalie, tell us more about it. So you were involved in the New York State Governor's Craft Beer Working Group. I think I met you on that one.
Along with you, my sweet.
And I heard you speak at the New York Wine, Beer, and Spirits Cider Summit last year.
Yes, I've been very humbly invited to provide a bit of a voice for the malt house component of the farm brewery legislation. There are so many issues still to work out with this particular license. Of concern right now is an absolute 180 in availability of New York State malt. We were dry as a bone for the first couple years, and now we have a surplus in some of the malt houses of ready-to-go base malt. And we're trying to tease out, what is this about? Is it a non-compliance issue? Is it a price issue? Is it a quality issue? And what is the SLA prepared to do as an answer to this? So far, they have sent us all a very nice letter reminding us of our moral and legal commitment to this legislation, as well as hints that there may be some auditing in the future. But if you do the number of farm breweries and the amount of malt that's being bought from New York State, the numbers don't match, and we just don't know why that is yet. So I'm there to kind of help them figure that out.
Well, that's good. I think you've got a couple years to work that out, don't you?
We do.
But this is just from last year. Remember New York City Brewers Choice last year? I think we had almost 20 brewers that used some type of New York grain malt.
Right.
And now we're at almost 40. And the Smash Beer with the New York City guys is a beer entirely made from New York grain and hops. But for you, I mean, you guys at Farmhouse, that's what you do.
That's what we do, yeah.
So you are the Smash.
You're the brewery. Smash brewery. Yeah.
That's what we do, yeah. We have, you know, like I said, we don't make the specialty malts. So some of our darker beers, we don't make the black malt and special bees. So we still buy that. So most of our beers are between 90-95% to 100% New York State grown ingredients.
Right. And those specialty malts typically only are at most 10% of the ingredients.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so you're Smash Central over there.
Yeah,
I think from a brewer's standpoint, as far as, you know, I remember Brewer's Choice last year, and when they said, okay, make a beer with all New York ingredients, and they gave us the list of what was available, as a brewer looking at it, it was like, what are we going to make? You know, so it was difficult. I think that's changed in the fact that there's more malting going on and there's more hops available. That are quality hops. There's key in both of those sides of the statement.
Yeah, and what you were saying about Long Island, we're seeing that upstate as well.
Right.
The quality hops are coming along. They're nice. They got great flavor.
Right.
And I particularly like the fact that what we've got this year was lower in alpha acids, but I like that. You know, we can add a lot more hop flavor without adding the bitterness.
Right. Better for aromatics.
Yeah.
We lucked out extremely with our fresh hop ale this year. we were brewing our fresh hop ale. We were literally at the evening of collecting the hops, you know, to mash in the next day. And Justin from Greenport Harbor showed up. He had called me earlier that day, and he said, listen, I have like 20 pounds of hops that I just picked. Do you want to use them? I said, we already have like 80 pounds from Kinsella, but yes, we'll take them and we'll use them. And he showed up, and he happened to have another 20 pounds from North Fork hops. So I was like, all right, we'll use them all. But the aromatics, it ended up being Chinook, Cascade,
Nugget,
and some Mentonum.
We actually went to Kinsella's farm the day we brewed, and I was lucky enough to help John cut the vines down and then run them through his machine and brought them to the brewery. So it was literally 45 minutes from when the plants were harvested to when it went in the beer. I would have loved to have brought that today, but, you know, a beer like that doesn't last very long.
Right.
Something that you really want to drink, you know, as fresh as it is, you want to drink it immediately. And, you know, a hoppy beer like that, that's all about the aromatics and those flavors, deteriorates rather quickly. So that's something you want to drink fast.
Yeah, public service announcement. If you have a bottle of that fresh hop ale, drink it now. And don't anticipate. Yeah, don't anticipate a lot.
What about for you guys? I mean, you've got these farmhouse ales, maybe local ingredients. I mean, just tell us more. I mean, I'm fascinated by you guys. Probably the name. First, are you a malt house or you're a brewery?
We started up, you know, it all started as a home brew that went crazy. I mean, we first started planting 10 hops, and then 10 became 50 hops, and 50 hops became 250 hops, and then it became 500 hops.
I've cut him off.
And then, you know, it's like, well, what's the next level of difficulty with home brewing? And I started malting my own grain, and that's where we started malting our own grain, and we used our own hops, and it was kind of, we were making a smash homebrew. And we just, you know, decided, I was going to get laid off and needed to either go back to school and learn more IT stuff or take control of our future. And we started the malt house. We had some dairy bulk tanks from the farm that we inherited, and we retrofitted those to malt in and found a warehouse. And one thing led to another. Like I said, it was a hobby that went crazy. I was still gainfully employed while we were malting as a malt house, and at the time we got closer to being laid off, we started the brewery side. And that's one thing. Like I said, one thing led to it all. You give a mouse a cookie. Give a brewer a hot
plant. Your poster boys from New York State Beer.
Right. That sounds like it. Now, do you guys have a tasting room up there?
We do. The tasting room's in Owego. Turns out
Newark Valley's a dry town.
Yeah. Now, if I had to go out on a limb, I would say that you guys have a farm brewery license. Is that?
Yes.
We don't have any other licenses. Right. We have 21 taps, which is an insane number of taps for our little town, and we fill them up. We have 3 old fashioned sodas that we brew at the brewery, and we have at least 8 to 10 of our own beers on tap, which is easy to do when you have a small brew system, and then guest taps of other farm breweries and farm cideries.
Awesome.
And we're packed every weekend. It's an exciting venture. At least once a week I ask you if you're crazy, and what is your answer?
Yes.
That'd be crazy. And we'll talk to you in a couple of years and see if you're still doing it.
Yes.
But we'll definitely, this summer when we go up to Cooperstown, when Belgium comes to Cooperstown, we'll definitely stop off. At least
yeah,
have a tasting
for sure.
Room.
Yeah.
I don't think you want to visit the brewery. I think we just want
to. Yeah,
we
just want to go to the tap.
Scene one, you see them all. Come to the tap room, have some beer. Yeah, we have the most ironic brewery around. As soon as it comes out, the fermenter goes in kegs and gets taken to the tap room. So there's no actual beer to drink at the brewery.
Gotcha. Now, are you guys open? You're only open on the weekends, or are you open Monday
Wednesday through Sunday?
Okay.
And the first thing you see when you walk through the door is our mastiff laying on a hammock.
Okay. Which would
Sal.
Be hard not to see.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you walk in and it's it's a family. We love on you, and we sample as graciously as we can. And we're just thankful for the amount of support. We're the only brewery in the county, so there isn't a lot of competition. Imagine if we had lost. So we're doing okay.
Nice.
Guys, let's make another toast here. We're drinking the Port Jeff special beer again. Sometimes I'm at a loss because it's like, you're all such pioneers. I mean, like, Mike, you started a small brewery in a town on Long Island, and Natalie and Marty, you guys have started a farmhouse brewery. I mean, you guys are successful in some way. and your beer's great. So you must be feeling pretty good, right?
Yeah. Just as tired and stressed as we all probably are. We are feeling great.
What are the worries that you have, you know? I mean, some people wake up and they're worried if they turn off the gas or, you know, is there someone outside your door and your dog's barking? I mean, as brewery owners, what kind of worries do you have
when
you wake up in the middle of the night?
As I walked into the show today, I bumped into a gentleman who had a hat on, and I looked over, and it was Evan from Barrier, and I said, "How you doing?" He's like, "Good." And he said, "How are you doing?" I said, "Good." and I was like, "Yeah, I'm living the dream." I think the reality is, you know, for both of us, at least Evan and I, we have kids that keep us going, and you know, it's as successful as we are. You know, we're successful. I'm able to make a living off of doing what I love to do, which I think is fabulous. That's what America's built on, you know. But my children definitely keep me going. The fact that my kid needs shoes means that we need to have a bottle release. The fact that, you know, but and above and beyond that, now it's to the point where, you know, I employ 9 to 10 people that they have families and they rely on the brewery. So to make sure that things tick and for them and make sure they're happy and they're fulfilling their thing. I mean, they're part of the dream. So that's very important to us. And I think that's what keeps us all going. Like I said before, we're a family, even though we're not, we're pretty much a family because we're in it together. If we succeed, we succeed. If we don't, then we drink Budweiser. I don't know.
What about you guys? I mean, Barney and Natalie.
I worry about the product. we don't heat or cool our brewery, so this time of year our chiller has a heating coil in it, and that's running that heater to heat the beer. And we learned early on that heating up your chiller lines that have been cold all summer stirs up a lot of muck, and we had a lot of clogged valves and clogged strainers. So, you know, when I wake up in the middle of the night, I grab my phone and look at my fermenter temperatures and make sure nothing's running, like getting too cold or getting too hot. That's what I get stressed about.
I worry about the cost of capital improvements and growing too quickly. I think slow and steady wins the race. Marty is the gas and I'm the brake. And luckily he has me because I try to temper the spending a bit. You could go crazy, and I think the biggest mistake any brewery makes initially is overcapitalizing, and you're chasing a loan that you feel like you can't pay off.
Right, I would agree with
that
completely.
Very much.
I've tried to make it a point to never have a line of credit. Like, in other words, if we're going to get something, I'm able to pay for it. And some of my vendors hate it because they're like, you know, I won't order things because I don't have the money. I only pay for stuff that I have money for. And I think that's, I would say, as a lesson, and I'm still a very novice and virgin brewer to some degree, but never get anything that you can't pay for because you can't overextend yourself at that point.
All right. This is our second segment. We're recording at Pops Hill in Brooklyn, part of New York City Beer Week. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio.
You're listening to Cool Boys by Sleepies.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're doing a special show at Hops Hill in Clinton Hill, Brooklyn, right before the New York City Brewer's Choice as part of the New York Beer League. So we got some great guests here tonight, Mike and Matt from Port Jeff Brewery, Nico Kremitas, our intrepid beer writer, and Marty and Natalie from Farmhouse Brewing Upstate. So we're talking about your biggest fears and worries and things like that as brewers. So, Michael, you're just talking about your fears that you would get overextended on credit.
Yeah, I mean, and Natalie and I just talked about it at the break a little bit. You know, there's obviously to start something, you're gonna put money into it, and you're gonna have some sort of source of credit. But in my eyes, to keep that down as far as you can is going to be a blessing to you, because it helps you grow organically. It says, you know, what that means is if you have a good month and you make a few extra $100, maybe that's when you go buy new kegs, or that's when you go buy the thing that you were kind of looking at in the corner store, you know, through the window. It's like, hey, I want a hop back. It's like, well, you don't buy the hop back until you have the money to buy the hop back. And I think if you put hard work into it, those things happen, and then you don't have to worry about chasing that payment. I'm not going to say that I don't have payments for things. That's not what I'm talking about. But, you know, I guess keeping things in perspective, and really what Natalie said about growing organically is huge, you know. So you've seen a larger breweries fail or have issues because they overextend on what they're doing with regards to expansion. And so, you know, for us at Port Jeff, I mean, we have a 7-barrel brew house. Yes, we have some other tanks at a couple other breweries, and we're happy doing that. But that a lot of that is to validate, can we do the next step? And when we're able to do the next step, let's go with the next step.
I think you're doing it right.
Thanks.
You know? So, Natalie, you guys, go back on your fears. So is he raring ahead? What is something that you want to buy, Marty, that she's telling you can't afford?
Well, let me count the things.
I have a list too.
Yeah, I do try to keep, you know, keep in mind what's toys and what do I need, you know? And
car hat, jacket.
Luckily, it takes two signatures, generally. Yeah.
So we would like more kegs so we can distribute more. And rolled into bottling soon. So it's those are two big things that are on the cusp but not happening right now.
And now we're drinking your cider.
This is our cider, yeah. So this cider, it's dried out completely. It has some dry Willamette hops in it. And it came from, the cider actually came from Indian Lather Farms, from Dieter Gehring that you had on a few weeks ago. So it's really nice cider. It's tart and sweet. It worked out really well.
I have celiac disease, which is very unfortunate, being married to a brewer.
So as a maltster?
Yes.
The maltster's wife.
The maltster's wife. That's my curse.
So that's how she humors
me. So I'm gonna help you out here and let you know that gluten-free beer is called cider and wine.
It's called cider
and wine. I have not tried a gluten-free beer that was drinkable as a celiac, and maybe that's unique to me. So Marty wanted to have something in the menu for me. So we created this, and it's called Trellis. No residual sweetness. It's a huge hit at the brewery. Our bottleneck with this particular product is we can't get enough in-state juice. So when Dietrich called and wanted to do a trade, we were all over it and very excited.
So he gave you the cider, and then you, what did you do?
And we traded for malt. We malt some grains that he brings us.
So you took hard cider from Dietrich.
We took fresh pressed cider and traded it for malt, basically.
That's fantabulous.
Yeah. This is really
it's
good.
Awesome. Yeah, I think what you said, you noted really quick that there's not a residual sweetness. And with a lot of the ciders that are available, there's that residual sweetness. And Matt and I would get into an argument about dryness, but it's the right amount of dry. So
yeah, it worked out well.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It sure is.
Yeah, I almost feel like I just bit into like a nice tart apple.
Yeah, yeah, really.
Yeah, that like comes from the apples. His blend is really nice with that. You get nice enough tartness in there to do that.
That's beautifully crafted.
How many beers are you serving today at New York City Brewers Choice?
We brought two in Sixtels, and we brought a six pack of growlers that under the table beers for people to taste. The two that we have next door in Sixtels is a Live On, which is a 100% New York State pale ale, and a Barn Burner, which is a Belgian Double, which is a 95% New York State grown.
Oak-aged
Belgian Double. So we take local honey, make our own Belgian candy syrup with that first. So we add honey right to the boil kettle and cook that down while we're mashing, and then we mash out on top of that. So it's We heat it up till it's like a hard candy stage. It's black and caramelized. That adds a lot of the raisin molasses flavors that are in there. Add the beer to that, and then after it's done fermenting, it sits on oak for a few weeks until we just the right amount of vanilla and oak comes through.
So jumping to the next step. So for New York ingredients, you know, you have water, malt, and hops. What about yeast? I don't know if Nico was joking about it, because the smash beers are New York malt and hops. Didn't you say, why doesn't it have New York yeast?
Well, I wrote an article on, actually, I think they're friends of yours, Plan B Brewery, and one of the conversations I had with Evan, who is co-owner of that brewery upstate in Fishkill, was, is it a truly New York grown beer or all New York beer if the yeast is from somewhere else? And, you know, he cultivates a lot of his own yeast strains, and he believes that, you know, the yeast needs to be from, I guess, that area to be considered a local beer.
Or at least found in the area.
Yeah, well, God bless him. That's really awesome. He takes 100% beer and makes it, you know, I don't know, 101% by adding that. It goes above and beyond. And that is so awesome. His beers are great. And to the fact that, you know, everything but the malt, he harvests on his farm, and including the yeast. So that is really cool. That's a great farm brewery right there.
That's a slippery slope though too, because as you're harvesting yeast locally, you know, you can harvest all sorts of things that you may not want, or maybe spoilers, or maybe yeast that show up back end that were very resilient, you know, to the alcohol, and then they erupt and start to do some other things. So God bless him for taking that mentality, or taking that approach, really. The mentality is great. The approach is risky, I think. But it works. There's definitely yeast that are available in our airspace that we can use that will ferment alcohol, or ferment to alcohol. So, yeah.
They didn't even know yeast existed until the 1800s. I mean, all beer was made with God is good.
Right.
Which was, you know, they would scrape a little bit of the foam off the previous beer, throw into the next batch, and it would ferment. Like, they didn't even know what it was. It was making beer, you know, and they didn't even know beer was a living organism. It was just, you know, I think Louis Pasteur discovered yeast in the 1800s, and from there it's all
taken. Say God is good, is that what you're saying?
God is good is what it was called. They just, you know, it was God created the beer. And, you know, beer really is a living thing. You know, every time you drink a beer, it was the creation of a living organism that made that beer. You know, so you almost have to treat it as such. You have to give it care and, you know, make sure that it grows into what you want it to grow into. You know, we really do our hardest to keep New York yeast out of our beer, to be honest. We have a very controlled environment that, you know, we want exactly the ingredients we put in scientifically to create the beer that we want to create.
Right, yeah, because we're looking for a certain flavor profile. We just talked about that today, actually, when inoculating a batch with yeast. We did that right before we came. We were talking about, you know, we close off the doors of the brewery and do everything we can to create the least disruption possible so that when we open the fermenter, only what we want.
Yeah. I've actually learned I can hold my breath for over a minute, because I hold my breath every time I crop yeast, because I don't even want to breathe on it. You know, I take every step I possibly can to make sure that the only yeast in that beer is the yeast that I want to get in that beer.
Right. You open really a can of worms. What about you guys? With your farmhouse ales and your ciders, you're also using controlled yeast?
Yeah, so, yeah, and it's even more dangerous and scary for us, because we're malting right in the same space that we're brewing in. And so we have just tons of wild yeast in the air. So we do have a big exhaust fan, and we turn the big exhaust fan on, and it's running the whole time we're making beer. And then when we get time to pitch these, then we turn it off, and same thing, gotta let things settle out, and then hope that there's not.
Right.
We hope for the best, and luckily we've been lucky. So
we're in a little bit of a similar situation. Our mill room is about 3 feet from one of our fermenters, so it's all there. You got to be super careful and super protective of it.
Yeah. But let's jump to another thing. Since you guys are local breweries, what about spent grain? There was some talk last year that there might be some taxes or some regulations.
Yeah,
but tell us, like, generally, how much spent grain do you guys produce, and what do you do with it, and what does it cost you guys?
We give it away. So we have a farmer who's both a pig and dairy farmer and chickens. So he comes and picks up all our spent grain, all our root culms. So when we make malt, we knock the roots off and separate those from the seed. So he comes and picks up a couple bushels of those every time we make malt, and then he picks up, you know,
yeast.
spent, he takes our spent yeast and cooks that and feeds that to his animals as well.
This past weekend, his wife dropped off like three hams,
and some bacon
on the back porch.
Yeah,
it's a pretty sweet deal.
So you guys have the exact opposite deal that we have.
Yeah, we have no cattle farms or anything on Long Island because the real estate's so high. So we actually have to dispose of most of our spent grain. Although my girlfriend Suzanne and I are caretakers of a historic property on Long Island, and we have animals there that we're able to you know, repurpose that grain for. So we have about a 30%, you know, ratio of spent grain for those animals, which is nice to repurpose some of it. But you know, there's only so much we can do out on Long Island because,
yeah.
I mean, there's cattle farming on Long Island is not going to make you any money whatsoever. So that's where we're running into trouble.
And we're probably producing somewhere in the neighborhood of 3,000 pounds of spent grain per week, and Matt's taking home like
10.
50.
Yeah. 10. So we actually looked at a couple different options as far as being able to use it as reusable fuel.
Yep.
So in other words, taking it, extracting the moisture out of it and making like basically like fuel logs out of it to repower the brewery. And it's still something we're looking at, but at our scale, it's not yet where it needs to be to make it.
Yeah,
you know.
Alaska Brewing does that. I gotta wonder if you get like a 1% net gain out of the energy you spend drying it out and then pelletizing it,
and then using that to fire
a boiler. You know, is there a net gain there at all?
Drying it out is really the hard part. That's where the FDA tried to step in last year and make all brewers dry their grain before giving it to farmers, which is nearly impossible, especially when you get on the bigger scales and you're looking at breweries that dry 1,000-plus pounds of grain daily.
Right.
I mean, the space you need to do that alone is incredible. You know, and you know, as long as it gets to the animals quickly, there's no problem with the grain.
So what was the result?
The result was they ended up pulling out because they realized they were about to mess up one of the best barters going on in America.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they tried to stick their feet in it and they probably are still nosing around, but the reality is what they uncovered was, hey, there's a lot of farmers that got a little PO'd about it.
Yeah,
and a lot of brewers too. It's one of those natural barter interactions that just works. Yeah, yeah.
Right. And they wanted the farmers to treat all food that goes to the animal like pet food. So it'd be dried down, can never be touched by human hands. And even part of that was even where if a farmer gives another farmer a bale of hay, that bale of hay can never touch the ground.
Right.
And it's, you know, you're giving it to a cow who's eating grass right down to the dirt, but the hay can't touch the ground.
I have a little anecdotal story that's relevant to this.
My
farmer's wife sent a text out Saturday morning early, you know, saying we're going to be dropping some ham and bacon off on the back porch. And she said, you know, I have to thank you guys again for the amount of grain you give me because our checkbook's thankful because this weekend we had to buy a new washer and dryer. And that's expensive and you save us so much money. She said, they say the cows literally come running when they see the totes come out.
Oh, yeah.
So. Yeah, I was delivering it one day and they have a Jenny, you know, a donkey that came down and was like pushing me away to get to the.
Yeah.
She couldn't get to it quick enough.
They love it.
Yeah.
And rightfully so.
Yeah. It's actually an acquired taste, just like beer is for some people. Like when you initially give the animals the grain, they kind of turn their nose away until they taste it. And then they're sold.
It's like
they're
candy.
They're immediately sold, yeah.
Right.
I'm glad we talked about that because I know that was a big deal last year. And what else are we going to talk about? We got a few minutes left. I would love to say that that's definitely something about being up in the country. I mean, you have that access to farmers, so you need that swap. I mean, the first time I ever experienced it when I was in Amsterdam years ago, and there's a local brewery downtown, the egg brewery, Brewery Tige, and they send their spent grain across the harbor to a sheep farmer, and then he would make these sheep's milk camembert and send it back to them. So I think there's a possibility of higher end, you know, trade if you're making sheep's milk or something else too.
I have one thing I can bring up that has been very enlightening to me. At our tap room, we've been open since June of last year. I can honestly say we have as many women as men that come in who are dedicated to craft and local and have been dying to come see us. And I don't even know how to say thank you enough.
I would say ditto to that, definitely. Completely. We see the same thing in our tasting room. So I may say that more men stick around longer than they should, but in reality, the customership tends to be a pretty fair 50-50.
Yeah. And we try to cater to everybody, too. We make such a variety of beers. We make light beers. We make dark beers. I mean, right now, we're drinking a apple brandy barrel-aged barley wine. You know, we'll do everything from that to a blueberry wheat beer. So we try to cover, like, every, you know, prism of the entire drinking.
Nick, what did you want to say? I saw you lean
in. Oh, yeah, I was just going to say that, you know, Mike crack open another beer, so to talk about that.
So tell us again, the barley wine.
So this is our Cold North Wind. The Cold North Wind is a beer that I ended up making as I was a home brewer one night. I got home and I didn't have the ingredients that I needed to make a beer that I wanted, so I grabbed everything that I had and I put it all in the mash tun. And I, fortunately enough, I wrote it down, and that ended up being our Cold North Wind, which the only thing I could characterize it as is a barley wine. So we made this barley wine earlier this year and put it in an apple brandy barrel, which is kind of a special release for us. We have it at the brewery in 22-ounce bottles, and that's what we're drinking. So
it's awesome, actually.
Thanks.
I can sit here smelling all night long.
Yeah, it's got a nice candy quality to it. And,
it smells great.
Not too boozy. It's good. So we like it, and we love being on Beer Sessions Radio.
Love you guys. We're going to close it out. Thanks to our host here, Hops Hill, in Clinton Hill, in Brooklyn. It's getting loud here because we're getting ready to go over to New York City Brewers Choice around the corner. I'd like to thank our sponsors at Union Beer Distributors who have helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Thanks to Nico, Mike, Matt, Natalie, and Marty for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Maggie Seiden and Justin Kennedy, who are also here at Hops Hill, and to our engineer, Jack Inslee. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
Heritage Radio Network is a member-supported nonprofit organization broadcasting over 30 live shows a week. To learn more and donate, visit our website or connect with us on iTunes, Stitcher, Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram for more. Thanks for listening.